Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Tzadei Vav, and we're holding right at the Mishnah. Hanotel Gid HaNasheh. So we finally get to some of the machlokasim that we've been referring to earlier, and this Mishnah sort of sums it up, because we've got three separate machlokasim here, and the Gemara actually figures out that there's a fourth one that's hidden sort of between the lines. And so, someone is taking off the Gid HaNasheh. So our first big machlokas, as we know, was the issue of how much you need to dig the Gid. So according to the Tadakama, Tzarich Shiyitol et Kulo, you've got to take that entire Gid HaNasheh out, you got to gouge out every little bit of the Gid HaNasheh as its branch nerves go through the thigh. But Rabbi Yehuda says, all you need is enough to be mekayembo mitzvat netilah. There's a mitzvah to be notel, the gid. Now, we had this in a braita before, but it's the first time we finally get to it in the actual Gemara, and in the actual Mishnah. And you only need to be mekayem what the mitzvah in the Torah was, which is sha'al hakaf. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, our first point is al. You got to take what's on, and that is the gomamoim hashofi. You take it off whatever is visible on top of the muscle, but you don't go into digging it out. That's machlokas number one. Machlokas number two. Now, ochel migid hanasheh kizayit. We had this machloket before earlier. You eat one kizayit of a gid hanasheh, and you're sofeg arba'im. But what about if you ate the entire gid, achalot, but there is not a kezayit? It's a small animal, and the nerve itself does not have a kezayit. What would be the din? Well, here we're told that you'd be chayiv. This is the din of the Tanakhama, that you would be chayiv. Now, the reason that you're chayiv is that even though there's no kezayit, remember we have a concept of a birya. So the complete, whatever it is, the Torah said, don't eat an ant. Then even if you eat the ant, and it's just an ant, and it's nowhere near the shear of a kezayit, nonetheless, it would be chayit. So the same thing is true over here. The Gid HaNasheh is defined as a thing. So that if you ate that thing in the Torah, you would be chayit. Furthermore, if you ate ochlo mizeh umizeh, kezayit mizeh v'kezayit mizeh, if you eat a kezayit of the Gid HaNasheh from the right thigh and a kezayit of the Gid HaNasheh from the left side, you would also be chayev shmonim, because each one of them is a separate chayev. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Omer, as we know, Rabbi Yehuda holds that eino sofeg ela arba'im, he holds only one of those thighs are usher. And because of that, even though you eat both of them, you would only be chayev one. And we went into the whole question before, how would you be chayev even one if Rabbi Yehuda isn't certain which one is which? And we wanted to bring a raya from here that Rabbi Yehuda holds. We know that it's the right side, and we said maybe it's the Rabbi Yehuda who holds that the atra'at safek is atra'a. Anyway, we went through the whole thing. We finally came out that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we know which one it is. There's no problem here, and it's the right one. Therefore, he's only chayim arba'im. So, obviously, the Tanakhama holds that each one of them is chayim separately. So Bar Piyule is a gentleman who was doing the Piyule. He was pulling off the Gid HaNasheh from the meat in the house of Shmuel. And he was doing this in front of Shmuel. And Avikoika made the Shmuel v'kominaker atma. So he was doing the Nikur. The Nikur is, of course, the correct name for the Yiddish trabering, which everybody uses. So he was doing Nikur. And Avikogoyimle. And he just was cutting it off from on top because he was going according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Shmuel said to him, hey, man, dig the gid. Chot beit vei. You got to get into it. What's this business of just digging it up right off the top? Man, good thing I saw you. Ashtaloch is itach. If I hadn't seen you, You would have been feeding me ganache for lunch. Oh my God. Safita Anyway, Bar Piula was so devastated that Shmuel considered him to be a total Amoritz, or maybe, who knows, maybe he's even a Russia Gomer who's too lazy to take out the Gitanasha, and he's going to feed Shmuel Gitanasha. That he starts shaking, and the knife actually falls out of his hands. Irtat, nafu sakina miyadeh. Or my laser, Shmuel said to him, no, cool it, pass for Shalom. Obviously, I know the Ori Lacha, Rabbi Yehuda Ori Lacha. You were doing the right thing according to what your Kabbalah was. Whoever taught you the dinim of Nikur, he taught you according to Rabbi Yehuda, and you were following the dinim of Rabbi Yehuda. I know that. I just personally, I hold like Rabbi Meir, so I wanted you to do it better. But I understand that, of course, you were doing what you knew was right. Omer of Sheshes, you got to know that what Bar Piuli actually had removed in this case, that was the part of the Gitanasha that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is a Deoraisa Isra. What? What are you trying to say? That, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's another part that's the Rabbanan that Bar Piuli didn't take off? That's ridiculous. I mean, the point over here is that we were saying Bar Piuli did what, according to Rabbi Yehuda, needed to be done. So what are you trying to say? Michlal b'shir, derabbanan, the Rabbi Yehuda? What he didn't take out was still usher. So then Shmuel should have really given it to him over the head. Why did he tell him, don't worry, I know you did it according to Rabbi Yehuda? He obviously didn't do it even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So whose psak was he following? So who was he taught to do? Wasn't Rabbi Yehuda? Wasn't Rabbi Meir? Who was it? No. That can't be what Rav Sheshes said. Ella, what Rav Sheshes must have said was that my deshaka Bar Piule, what Bar Piule had actually done when he was not digging the git, but he was gomamomi ala shofi, that was the part that was deraisa, and that was even according to Rabbi Meir. Everything that was deraisa, you had taken off, even I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir. My deshir, what was left over, even according to Rabbi Meir, was only drabbana. That's what it is that we're saying. So my deshire was asur midrabbana, and according to Rabbi Meir, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, obviously, it was completely mutter. De'i Rabbi Yehuda filu midrabbana shorit. So basically, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's only the Issur D'oraita, and that's it. And you should know that Rabbi Yehuda did not hold of an extension of the Gitanasha Midrabban, even Midrabban. So that's what Rav Sheshes essentially was saying. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Somebody eats a Gitanasha, so he's going to be Chayev, even if it didn't have a Gezayah. He'd still be Chayev. Omar Shmuel. Okay, so now this leads us to an understanding of another machloket. Omar Shmuel, lo aserat Torah, ela she'ala kaf bilvad. You should know that midiraisa, it's true that we identified the gitanasha as the sciatic nerve, and it's true that that extends down the entire thigh, and it penetrates it, like we said before, including maklid, and it has the knoknot, and there's a lot of stuff about gitanasha. But let's talk about the fundamental iser midiraita. Says Shmuel, the only part of the Gitanasha, despite the fact that it goes all the way down till the leg, it doesn't matter. It's only the part of the Gitanasha that is directly on top of the muscle, on the part that is shaped like the calf, which is on the top. That's the only part that is Aser Midiyoraita. The rest of it that we kept talking about over here, the rest of it is only a Derabbanan, and that's what we said before of a. There was a different girsa in the Rambam, apparently, but that's what we said before. That's the way we paskin, that, at least the Ashkenazim, that it's four etzba'ot. In the Shor HaGadol, we said it's arba badate, remember earlier. Fine. So that's only in a large animal. In a smaller animal, obviously, it's even less than that. And I mean, it can get a lot less than that if you have a very large, small animal. In other words, you've got, let's say, a sheep, a goat, a yourself fully grown, so then it's half that size. But if you've got a kid and so on, it could be much smaller. So that's a big chiddush. How do I say that? Well, I think that's the meaning of the pasuk. It's the part that's on the kaf, and that's the only part that the Torah answered. So now, obviously, there was another way to understand that, which we learned before. And the other way was to understand that that was the identification of the entire nerve. Which one? The one asher kaf hayorech. But then you would be usher in eating any of it all the way down. But Shmuel says, no, it means exactly what it says. You are chayev only on the part that was kaf hayorech. And that's what is the diorite. Rav Papa, so now this is a big chiddush that Rav Papa wants to say. Rav Papa says that in fact what Shmuel said is gufa dependent in the machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore it brings us to yet a fourth issue that we have to talk about, this machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Because take a look at this braita. I'm going to prove to you that this machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan, assuming the Rabbanan is Rabbi Meir, it's not so pashut. As we'll see later, I said Rabbi and Rabbi Meir, but here it's the Machlokas, Rabbi and the Rabbanan. Many Rishonim assume that these Rabbanan are actually is the Shita of Rabbi Meir, but that's the Machlokas. And here's the question. If you ate the Gid HaNashe, now we skipped this, we just said what the din would be if Achalo. And we said the din of Achalo is that it's a Birya, that's according to the Rabbanan. Here we find that if you eat the entire thing, it's only the Rabbanan that say that even though it doesn't have a kizayin, you would be chayav. Basha'in king, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, it's Rabbi Yehuda that says, no, it's got to have a kizayin, even if you ate the entire thing. So what does this have to do with the question of Shmuel? Taina's Rav Papa, if you analyze how they are learning the pasuk to support their each one their own shita here, you will see that it's a function of whether you understand the pasuk like Shmuel or not. So it revolves around the issue of what is meant by those words, Asher al kaf hayoreth. And let me show you how the two machlokasim actually boiled down to the din of Shmuel. Because look, why do the Rabbanan say over here that you're chayev on the Gid HaNashe, even though you did not eat a kizayin? Because obviously, they taina, look, it's a birya, and the halacha is that if you eat a birya b'fnei atzma, that you're chayiv. So if the Torah asered eating shratzim, and one of those shratzim is an ant, so then that ant is a birya, and even though obviously it's not a kizayit, but you still would be chayiv for eating it. So the same thing would be true about the Gid HaNashe. This is essentially a birya. And that's why you would be chayiv. So how does Rabbi Yehuda not hold that? The Rabbi Yehuda. So, I mean, surely Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue on the overall halacha of birya, but why does he say this case is different? Well, Rabbi Yehuda says the Torah specifically mentioned the word achila. Now, achila always means a kizayit, and therefore here too, it means a kizayit. And therefore, when you're talking about this case, it could only be talking about a case that you eat a whole kizayit. Because otherwise, the Torah would have said a different lashon. Instead of saying, al-kein lo yochlu, which means that there has to be the act of achila on the part of a person, could have said, lo ye'achel gid hanasheh, which is not referring to an act of eating. It would simply mean it shouldn't be consumed. And therefore, if the Torah said kizayit, it's got to mean a kizayit, don't you think? Now, this, of course, is different from other cases where the Torah uses the word achila, let's say by shrotzim, because we have some psukim that refer to Echila when it comes to sherets, and some psukim that don't refer to achila, sheket sulachem, or stuff like that. So there I understand that there's a possibility of eating a kizayit from an entire sheretz, but I need to know that you'd be chayev, even though the entire sheretz is three or four kezesim, or maybe 100 kezesim, and you could be chayev on each one of them. I mean, we don't have a situation like that with the gid hanashe. And over here, if the Torah said it's achila, it must be coming to tell me it needs to be an actual act of achila. That's the point. Whereas the Rabbanan say, ahi achila. No, achila means like it would mean elsewhere. In the event that you've got four or five kizeis in your gidanasha, so it's a very large gidanasha, and you need to know that even if you didn't eat the entire gidanasha and it's only eating the birya, that would be mechayev you. That would be a mistake. If you ate one kizeit, you would also be chayev. That's what it's coming to tell me. But it's not coming to tell me that you're only chayev if you ate a kizayit. Where do you get that from? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, oh, that I know that you're chayev if you eat only part of it. I don't need it to tell me that you're chayev on eating only part of it. That's a kizayit because I learned that out from the part of the pasuk says, asher al kaf hayorech. So it says that the part that you're chayev on is a part. It's not the birya. So how would I have thought that you're only chayev if you ate the birya, if the Torah already made it clear that you're chayev only on a part of that nerve and not on the whole nerve, in which case it's obvious that we're talking about even achila of a partial gidanasha. But then that means that I don't need the word achila, because that would be true just from the obvious fact that the Torah did in Aser Iberia. So what else could it be? So that I know from Al-Kaf HaYorech. So that would mean that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we use the pasuk of Al-Kaf HaYorech to tell me that you would be chayev on even eating a part. Whereas the Rabbanan say, and here you can see why it boils down to the same machlokas about whether we hold of Shmuel. The Rabbanan say you cannot learn it from Al-Kaf HaYorech, because Al-Kaf HaYorech is coming to tell me the din of Shmuel. And Shmuel said that from that pasuk we learn, Lo Asra Torah, Ela She'al-Kaf HaYorech. The only part of the Gid HaNosha that you're chayev on, what defines that gid anasha is the gid on top of the kaf hayorech. But it's not coming to tell me that if you eat only part of a gid anasha, it would be chayev for kizayit. So therefore, it boils down to that issue. According to the Rabbanan, since it says the lashon of achila, the lashon of achila is necessary to tell me that you would be chayev even for eating just part of the gid hanashan. You don't have to consider dafka, the achila of Iberia, as what's mechayev. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, in the very definition of the iser of the gid hanashan, the Torah already said that it's not a function of this birya, and even if you ate just that part of al-kaf hayorech. Masha'inke, the Rabbanan say, no, al-kaf hayorech is not coming to tell me that even part of it. Al-Kaf HaYorech is telling me which part is the Isser. Lo Asra Torah Ela Sh'al-Kaf HaYorech. So that means that it boils down to a machlokas about whether we need a pasuk for Shmuel or not. Now, why does Rabbi Yehuda reject that? Because Rabbi Yehuda says, look, that actually would mean the opposite. How could it be telling me this business about Shmuel? It says Hayorech. Doesn't the Yorech mean the entire Yorech? So that means Rabbi Yehuda does not hold the Chlal of Shmuel. That's the question. We don't need the Pasuk of Shmuel. He says he's wrong. If the Torah says that the Gid is the Gid of the Yorech, it means the entire thigh and the whole Gid Anasha is Usur. But where would Shmuel come up with this idea that only the part that's Al-Kaf Mamish is Usur? So that doesn't even make sense. Whereas the Rabbanan say, no, that pasuk of Hayorech, that is coming to identify what is the Gid HaNasha. There's lots of nerves that run down out of the spinal column and run into the leg. So what is what the Gid HaNasha? The Torah is coming to define. The Gid HaNasha is that nerve that is Poshet Isure Bekule Yorech. The nerve that goes through the entire thigh, That is only the one which is the pnimi, we said before. And that's the get anasha, but the other one, la fuke chitzon, as it comes to the nerves that are on the outside, not facing towards the other leg, those don't penetrate the entire thigh. And you remember, we had the machlokas with the Temani identification and the Ashkenazi and some Sephardi identification. And that was either of those nerves only come entering the thigh either at midpoint or lower. So the chitzon is not the kula yorech, and it does not penetrate the entire thigh, and therefore it's not the gedanasha. But that doesn't mean that it's the entire part that's usser. It just is an identification. But the point is, according to us, that we hold of Shmuel, the only part of the nerve that penetrates the entire thigh that the Torah is telling you is usser, is the part of the nerve that goes down the entire thigh, but that is on the portion which is on the calf. That's what he's saying. So there's two different issues. We have to identify the nerve, and then we have to talk about where the isser is. One has nothing to do with the other. So anyway, it's clear that the Rabbanan actually used the pasuk to tell me Shmuel's din, and that is that the Gid HaNasha is defined as the chelik, which is Sha'al HaKaf, which that means they hold of Shmuel. Masha'im Kain, Reb Yehuda says, that's crazy. How can you say that that's the only part that's usher if the Torah identifies the Gid HaNasha as Hayarech, the one that goes through the entire thigh? And that is basically, says Rav Papa, that's what I'm trying to tell you. That there is really a different machlokas. So that means that we actually have a total of four separate issues here. One, which is just that we understood now, as I say, it's not necessarily true that this is Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, but many Rishonim learned that it is. So we have four separate machlokas in. According to many, it's a machlokas between the same two shittas we've had all along. So, first of all, we had the machlokas about whether you have to actually dig the git. That was that first machlokas. The Tanakhama, and that we know was Rabbi Meir, we saw that before, holds that you cannot just take off the part that's on top of the muscle. You have to dig into it and get it all out. Fine. Rabbi Yehuda continues to maintain that you only have to cut out the portion that is above the muscle itself, as long as you get everything off the top. So then it's gomamo im hashofi. Gomamo im hashofi means you make it even with the top of the muscle. That's our first machlokas. Then we have our second machlokas. So over here, the Rabbanan that say over here, assuming that's Rabbi Meir, but the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, and the same, so we saw that the Tanakam, we called them the Rabbanan and the Braita as well, so we haven't identified them. But they say that if you eat a Gid HaNasha that is a birya, you would be chayev malchus. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah uses the word achila to tell me that unless you actually did a maisav achila, you ate a kisayas, you're not going to be chayev malchus, even if you ate entire birya. Because, okay, we already had the pasuk telling me that I don't need to eat the entire thing. So therefore, the only use I have of that word of achila is gufa to tell me the need of kizayis. That's the second machlokas. Then we have beferish, the other machlokas, about which gid anasha, right side or left side. So that, once again, we find, according to the Tanakhama here, you're chayav shmonim, because you're chayav on both the gid of the yamin and the gid of smol. According to Rabbi Yehuda, as we saw before in detail, the question of how Soro Shel Esav, did he sneak up on Yaakov, get him from behind, grab both of them, whatever the case was, the Shita is that should be Chayim on both of them, and then they let your Chayim Shmonim. So those were the three basic machlokasin. And
Sorry, Rabbi just said the same thing twice.
no,
Both of them shmonim.
what?
Rabbi just gave each shita as shmonim. Which one is not shmonim?
Rabbi Yehuda said you're only chayev on the right side. Well, how did I say
Arba'im. Okay. Okay.
shmonim? Okay, if I said shmonim, it was just this slip of the old man's tongue. Okay, now, We also here claim, according to Rav Papa, that we have yet another machlokas tanoim, and that is not in the Mishnah. But it turns out that the way Rav Papa analyzes the machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rav Yehuda, it's a machlokas about whether Shmuel is correct in claiming that the Torah only answered the part of the Gidanasha that is on top of the kaf. And according to the way Rav Papa learned it, so the Rabbanan, who are the Rabbanan here in our Mishnah, also called the Rabbanan in the Braita, that did not identify this Rebbe Meir. So basically, they held like Shmuel, because that's the way he understood the Machlokas and the analysis of the Pasuk. Mashen Ken, Rebbe Yehuda holds that the whole Gita Nasha is going to be a D'oraisa, which is why he argues on them and says the part that is Achila is not to tell me that you're only Chayav on part, because that's a given. So, okay, according to that, we would have four separate machlokas in, and according to most, this would be a machlokas between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda. Not everybody agrees to that, and basically, as we could see in Tosfos and some of the other Rishonim, that Ein Hachinami, Rebbe Meir himself, holds that there is, in fact, it's Rebbe Meir, and he agrees with Rebbe Yehuda about the question of Shmuel. I mean, we never find that Rebbe Meir holds that you're only Chayav al HaKaf. And when he says that you have to dig that gid out of everywhere, he's referring to the issue of a D'oraisa Isra on the entire length of the Gid Anasha. And that means that the Shita of the Rabbanan that we're saying over here, that according to Rav Papa was proven to hold like Dafka, like Shmuel, is not definitely Rebbe Meir. And many holds that Dafka, not Rebbe Meir, which would mean that both the Rabbanan here in the Braita we just brought and the Rabbanan that are mentioned in the Mishnah is not the Rebbe Meir that is arguing with Rebbe Yehuda. Okay. However, certainly it's possible that we even have four machlokas in between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda itself. The problem is that this whole analysis of the machlokas about Agabe Hakaf, that machlokas seems to ignore the other thing that we learned from Al Hakaf Ayorechem. What was that? I mean, I don't care whether you're using it to identify or you're using it to the way that we were saying the Rabbanan here, you're using it to tell me lo asra tera ela shal hakaf, because before we said that we learn a very important halacha out of the kaf, and that is to tell me that if you have a species that doesn't have a kaf-shaped muscle, then it doesn't have a gid hanasha. And it was from there that we learned that there's no din of removing the gid hanasha of a bird because it doesn't have a kaf. So then we need that, according to everybody, first to identify the species of a gid hanasha. I mean, that would be the most fundamental use of the word kaf. So what right do you have to, like, branch off, excuse the Barnea pun here, but what right do you have to branch off in that kaf and say it's talking about only that part that's on the kaf, or it's coming to tell me, identify the, which nerve we're talking about? So I thought we used haikaf miboile lemu'ute of. Didn't we say that the point is that a bird is not considered to be osir negid anasha because it doesn't have a shape of a muscle like a kaf? True, absolutely, but you're forgetting. How does the pasuk go? Al kein lo yochu b'nei Yisrael et gid anasheh asher al kaf hayorech ad hayom hazeh, ki naga b'kaf yorech Yaakov b'gid anasheh. So basically, the Torah is stressing the kaf twice, and that means that we've got a actual pasuk which we used before. That's true. Al kaf. It's identifying a kaf. Well, we've got two mentionings of that kaf. Okay, so again, just to review the entire issue, what we have over here, how much do you need to dig out? That we know was the machlokas between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda. Is it enough to be gomumo im hashofim? These are fundamental machlokas The other question that we had, is it an iser of birria or is it an iser of achila? In which case, you would have to eat a kezayit and you would not be chayav, even in this case, even if you ate the entire gira nashim. The other machlokas is it possible to be chayav on one animal to two gira nashas? Do you have both a right and a left gira nasha, which you do according to Rabbi Meir? Or according to Rabbi Yehuda, remember we have Hada'at Noteh was the lashon that Rabbi Yehuda used, that Hada'at Noteh Shu Yamin, and then we've got the Machlokas, which according to Rav Papa is also a Machlokas dependent on these other Machlokasin, and that is Shmuel. Is it only Aser B'Dorayta, the actual part of the nerve that's Al Hakaf, or is the entire issue, the entire nerve itself included in this issue? Wow. Okay, so we are about to begin, which of course we won't do today. These are some of the most chomer issues in all of Shas, because basically the dinim of all the concepts of tarovet and bittul are here in these next couple of dafim. I should say, shouldn't a couple of dafim, the next four or five daf are going to include most of your smicha bechinas, and Richie's been preparing for that for quite a while here. I think since he was in kindergarten, he was always terrified of that bechina, and it's finally come, Rich. But by now, you've learned to handle it, I think, right? So,
Rabbi, if
yeah,
I'm not eating meat, all of this is irrelevant to me.
that's exactly why your children came to poison you, Richie. They wanted to remind you it's all about the meat. There you go.
No, we want to chew the fat with Rich.
As long as it's not Caleb Barnea.
So, okay. No,
Zuck,
no,
no,
no, that's the
no,
whole
Zuck.
point I've
You're
been
saving it for
making.
tomorrow. What?
Yes, I mean, after all, if this is, in fact, well, I don't know. You know what? I mean, we can do an easy intro, I guess, and do that. Yeah, okay, so go ahead.
Uh-oh, I see Shmuel is wants to get that Misha in one way or another.
We'll get the Mishnah in Bezrat Hashem. We can do the Mishnah at least. Go ahead. Go ahead.
The
Wow. Beautiful, Rich. It was worth our wait.
Mishnah.
Okay, so the Mishnah is talking about the opening of the concept of ta'arovet. What happens if you did not take out the gid-anash and you cooked the entire yarech in water with the gid-anasha? Now, what happens then? So yarech shenitbashel ba-gid-anasha. So if you cooked it and the gid-anasha was still in it, and now this is an important caveat, and you hold that yesh begidin benotein tam, which was another one of those gavi concepts, so that there is an actual taste, a meat taste to the git, then you are going to spread the taste of the iser of the gid throughout the entire thigh because you cooked it in with it. Now, you might say that you would spread the taste not only through the thigh, but you would spread the taste throughout the entire mixture, which includes the water, the gravy, the spices, and all the other things that you put in here. We'll discuss that in a moment. But im yesh ba, benotein tam, if there's enough gid anasha that the taste of the gid anasha could still be tasted in the meat, so then the entire thigh becomes usher because the ta'am is usher. So then this is a question of tam, the mokar in the Torah, that would tell us that even a taste of something, even if it's not ikar, it's not the actual thing, but that the ta'am would have the same din as the iser itself. We're going to examine that in throughout the sugya here. What's the din of ta'am ke'ikar? But here the Mishnah is saying, if you could detect the taste of the gid-anasha in this yarech, now that's mashba that is just in the yarech, which raises the issue on what happened to all of the other ingredients, or what happened to the water and gravy and so on. That is a big issue, and we'll see that it raises the question of what's called davuk. That is that in cases where a mixture is particularly attached to one element in the mixture, that is more chomer, and we consider the taste to have been spread specifically to that which it was davuk to, and that thing which is davuk, we're more machmer that you need a shear to be mevatalet even just in that piece. So this is just a hint of complications to come. But the problem is, of course, that a git anasha, even if you hold that it has a halachically defined taste, it's not a different taste than the taste of meat. It's just a weak taste of meat. So we would call the gittim having a taste of meat. And now you're saying, well, if you could taste the meat in the meat, I mean, that's ridiculous. How would you possibly taste the meat in the meat? Well, the point is that what we need to do is to figure out if the taste that we are tasting includes the taste of the meat that is offered by the gid. Well, how would we practically decide that? We would decide it, ketzad mishari nota, how can we tell if there would be the taste, since both of these things taste exactly alike? Now, let me just mention to you, gentlemen, that you're all aware of the fact that we've got this deal about shishim, you know, and if it's echad b'shishim, so then it's mutter. But if it's less than shishim kineged, then it's usur. An easy way to remember that is that the way that we always write benot ein tam, how do you write benot ein tam? You don't spell it out every time. You write benun tet, exactly. So if it's in 59, then it's usur. But if it's b'shishim, then it would be okay, right? So even in the very acronym for benot ein tam, we even have a remez to what we know to be the halacha. Very cute. Now, so now the shaila is, how do we actually get to that? Because it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah a shear of shishim. This was something that actually at the time that this Mishnah was written had not yet even been defined as a standard. This was something that was defined as a standard later by the Chachamim. And the original way in which you would generally define whether there's a taste is by tasting it. But what do you mean? That's a great way of, you know, hey, this tastes kosher. Well, it tasted good, but it wasn't kosher, you know. Okay, so how do you taste it? So that is called the old kapila nuchra taste, meaning you get a goyish chef. And you ask the goyish chef, do you taste any git anasha in this? Now, of course, he's not going to be able to answer the question here, but if it was a git anasha that was cooked, let's say in turnips, he could tell you. So now what the Mishnah says is, what we do know is that we are supposed to taste the git anasha in turnips. And that was the standard. Now, there's obvious all types of different things in which you could be mishayrin. Some things would be more easily tasteable, the other thing in it. Some things wouldn't. Some things would be sharpish and would bring out the taste. And so we have a Kabbalah, the way that we're supposed to be mishayrin. And this is like all of the dinim that the Rabbanan give us, all shiurim. This Rashi says is a shiur, and all of the shiurim were given over at Sinai, and ketzad misharinoto, the typical taste test would be substitute turnips for the meat in the thigh, and tell me whether if you put the git anasha of that size in the equivalent amount of turnips, would you be able to taste it in the turnips? So that would be the question over here. Now, at the end of the day, we come up with the standardized shear of shishim, and this is true of any min b'minai, because this is basically another example of min b'minai. So if you have one example of an iser that falls into the same thing, but that one is not usser, so you would use the same shear of shishim, but that is not yet known at the time of the Mishnah. Now, let's take a case where other gidim were actually cooked together with the git anasha. So what we've been talking about until now is the din of taima. We've been talking about taste. What about if the actual Gid HaNasha is present there in the pot? And this is a pot full of different Gidim. And now you end up with another problem, because if you're going to identify it, so you can always remove it, and then you've reduced it back to the issue of taste. But if you can't identify it and you can't remove the Gid HaNasha, you're talking not only about taste, you're talking about the actual presence of the Gid HaNasha. Now, the thing is that normally we have a concept of bittul berov. Bittul berov would mean that if you've got more kosher gid than gid anasha, you don't have to be able to identify it because everything is bittul berov. And yet, for some reason, the Mishnah says that it's not bittul berov, which is weird. And of course, the Gemara is going to have to go into this. Why, in the case of one gid anasha among two other type of gidin, why is the Gid HaNasha not simply bottle berov, not the rove that has to do with taste, but the simple question of whether you pick out a gid, is this a Gid HaNasha? Well, most of the gidin here are not a Gid HaNasha, so you can eat it, right? That's the classic rove equation. For some reason, we don't use the rove here, which we're going to get into again. So that means that our Mishnah is introducing both the question of taima and the question of a mixture of two solid items with each other. In one is one to two, would it be bottle? So Gid HaNasha shenidbasho im haginim. So if you can identify the Gid HaNasha, bisman shemakiro, and you can take it out, if you can take it out, then you're left with the taste. And that was what the first part of the Mishnah was talking about. But suppose you don't recognize which one is the Gid HaNasha. Ooh. So then, if not, all of the actual Gidim are Usser, because you cannot eat the actual Isser, because each one could be the real Gid HaNasha. But you are left with the rest of what's in the pot. So whatever else is in the pot is only going to be Usser if that Gid HaNasha would have been large enough to give a taste to the rest of it. And again, that's because yesh begidin benotin tam, according to our Tana. And so this actually, it turns out that our Mishnah is not nogea l'halacha, because the example, which is the gid, we paskin that ain't begidin benotin tam. And therefore, we can effectively ignore this issue when it comes to the Gid HaNasha. But meanwhile, this becomes the model for questions of detecting min b'minay and the issues of a yavesh b'yavesh mixture, which we'll see in the Gemara. But what's interesting is you'll notice that over here it talks about the gravy, the rotav, which could be a soup, whatever it is that you're cooking, right? And before, we only talked about the gid. Pretend that the gid is turnips. Okay, but what about the gravy? Why don't we take that into consideration? So again, as I mentioned earlier, here we're talking about the gidim that have been removed from the yarech. The first part of the Mishnah was talking about the yarech that was cooked together with the gid. And in that case, we have the connected problem. And that's called the chibur. So if you have the thing that is davuk, and it's actually mechubar, that's called an iser davuk. And because of that, some gufa learned from the Mishnah, and that there's a new iser that we're more machmir on whatever it is that's up against and contains the iser, and we can't allow the other ingredients, like the gravy, to be mevatel the iser. So that is a shita. Not the Tosis brings it, and not everybody is made it to this, but it's one way of understanding the Mishnah. The same thing would be true if you're talking about a chaticha shel nevela, v'chein chaticha shel dag tameh, and you cook that nevela with kosher meat, or you had a non-kosher fish and you cook that non-kosher fish together with other fish. So over here, the way in which we can detect the taste is not through tasting. And also, if it got actually mixed with the fish itself or with the pisin and valen, we don't know which one is which. So again, we've got two separate issues here. One is the yavesh b'yavesh, is the technical terminology, which we'll get to as we go. So one is the yavesh b'yavesh. Basically, we've got a mixture of fish, a mixture of pieces of meat, a mixture of different gedim. That has nothing to do with their being cooked. It's just, and it's nothing to do with how much gravy you've got. Only has to do with can you identify it or not, and how much there is of the other part. And our Mishnah seems to be saying it will never be kosher. You have to remove it, which, of course, as I said, we're going to discuss in the Gemara why that would be true. But here too, the Mishnah is applying the same din to different fish. So if you know which is the fish, so then you can actually remove the one that's usher, and you're left with the question of benot ten tam. And benot ten tam means that we estimate it as if it were a thing that we could taste, even though over here it's min bimino, we've got our old basar b'lefet taste. But im lav, kulan asurot, all of the actual pieces that are here, they're all usher. Why, we don't know, because it ought to be batel berov, but for some reason it's not. And the rest of it, the gravy, the rotav, is going to be benot in time. And this would be the rule across the board of so many halachas. And I'll just start the sugya, which we'll go over tomorrow, just to point out to you what the main point is that the Mishnah seems to be saying. And that is what Shmuel says is the Mishnah specifies cooked. Nit bashel means it was cooked in a liquid. And that means that there was a way of transferring the taste of the gid anasha throughout the entire thigh. But suppose you had broiled it. You didn't cook it in water. So there was no medium to transfer the taste. What would be the din there? Well, says Shmuel, the Mishnah says, dafka yerach nit bashel, which seems to be very clear that if you broiled a thigh with its gid anasha, you wouldn't have a problem. You just gotta, you can eat the whole thigh, but you gotta remove the gid. So kolef, you would just peel along the edge of the thigh until you reach the actual gid anasha. And we would say that the boiling essentially cauterizes the meat in that it dries it out. And it doesn't penetrate outside. The taste doesn't penetrate to the area outside. So you'd be able to continue peeling away and putting it in your mouth until you get to the actual gid. And your kolef bochel ad shemagia legid. So we'll talk about that issue, the differences between boiling, roasting, a medium that transfers taste, a direct transference of taste. As you can see, things are getting hot and very interesting. So we just did enough to whet your appetite for a delicious tomorrow.